Hi, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today's episode is Egba Women's Revolt. In the 1940s, there was an imposition of unfair taxation on the people, specifically women, by the British colonial government, which ultimately led to widespread protests. So for the next 10 minutes, I'm just going to be telling you about what led up to the protests and what the eventual results were. This protest took place in the Egba region, one of the ethnic groups that I had discussed in a previous episode. They were one of the many territories under the vast Oyo Empire, which was at some point, including Dahomey, now in Benin Republic, and Ashanti, now in Ghana. The Oyo Empire ruled loosely by giving each region autonomy, but the hold they had on all of these regions began to loosen in the 1700s due to the internal power tussles that they had. And many of the acquired territories unilaterally declared independence of the empire. And the Egbas were one of the people to do that. After they cut themselves up from the Oyo Empire, the newly independent Egba nation was susceptible to attacks, including incessant slave raids by the Dahomey. What helped them in their many conflicts was the rocky terrains, the most famous of them all being the Olumo Rock. But the rocky terrains that they had helped them to resist invaders. This constant threat pushed them into the hands of the colonizers for technical assistance. What they got was a steady supply of firearms and ammunition, and this helped them defeat their enemies. In 1893, they signed a treaty of independence with the British government, recognizing the Egbas as their own country and a fully independent nation. By the 1800s, Abeokuta, which is the capital of the Egba land, emerged as an economic center. But after the start of World War I in 1914, and due to the need for money to fund the war, the British government held a tighter grip on the region and disrupted the independence of the Egba nation. They imposed export taxes, so for merchants who were trying to sell their goods in Lagos, for example, would have to pay those duties. And when they realized that they weren't getting enough funds, they resorted to imposition of direct taxes. So things like sanitary fines, which affect farmers and market women. And in pre-colonial and colonial Nigeria, especially in the western part of the country, that was the job of women, farming and market trading. Then January 1, 1918, Abeokuta residents started paying taxes. Egba women were taxed separately from their husbands. So the British colonialists believed, quote, in the Yoruba culture, women are expected to work and have independent income. So Yoruba men and the colonizers believed that women often had money because they were the ones involved in the tie-dye, and they felt like they were so many successful women, they had money. And even today, Yoruba men still believe that women have lots of money, rightfully or wrongly. I think they're mostly correct. Some of the things that were imposed under the tax regime, girls were expected to pay taxes from the age of 5, boys from the age of 16. I don't know how a 5-year-old is expected to pay tax. I can see that if the women are the ones trading the market and making money, they will take their child along with them to the market, because then for the girls, they didn't go to school. They played with their friends and went to the market. But a 5-year-old paying taxes? And for those who were unable to pay the taxes, they were beaten, stripped of their clothes. Personal property was seized. There were even allegations of molestation of girls and women. The women realized that under colonization, their economic roles were diminished, but the taxes and levies increased. This led to the Adubi War. I'm not going to get too much into this one, but 6 months after the imposition of the taxes, almost 30,000 citizens rebelled against the regime. They destroyed railway and telegraph lines, and in defense of their nation against the occupier, a high-ranking Egba chief and a European trading agent were killed. Though concessions were made, the uprising was defeated because, of course, they had the superior firearms, but the unfair taxation remained the same. By the 1940s, the taxes became unbearable, especially in the aftermath of World War II. And as a result of the oppressive tax conditions, the Abeokuta Women's Union, AWU, was formed. Originally, it was called the Abeokuta Ladies Club, comprised of middle-class, educated women. It was formed by Fumilayo Ransom Kuti, a head teacher of a school, and her sister-in-law, Eniola Soyinka. It was this organization that was later renamed and now accepted women from different backgrounds because they felt that they could come together, collaborate, and solve their problems. The organization's sole purpose was to unite working-class market women and middle-class women. It is designed to challenge both colonial rule and patriarchal structure, end quote. Working class here, I think, seems to mean women who didn't have the formal education and privileges women from the ladies' club had. It is estimated that 200,000 women joined the AWU. The organization proposed many different things. One was the abrogation of the flat rate tax imposed on the women, and taxes instead be levied on the foreign companies and invest those funds in infrastructure, transportation, and education. They also request the abolition of the sole native authority. This was a vehicle of indirect rule that had been profitable for the British government, where they get a traditional ruler to be the sole authority on the citizens while being entirely controlled by the British government. The women wanted a more representative government that would also include women. Pre-colonial Yoruba culture always had a place for men and women in governance. Not equal and not in large numbers, but they always had a place. For the British colonizers that came then, their culture was different. Their women were at home. They took care of home. The men worked outside. What they did was bring in an even more dangerous gender dynamics imported to the Egba culture. And by changing the traditional systems of governance that existed and replacing it with the English version, the women could see that in the colonial era, their place in power was even less than what they had. The AWU resisted in many different ways. They wrote many petitions to the Elake of Egbaland, and that is the title given to the king, Oba Ladakpo Ademola II. Some women refused to pay the tax and were fined, beaten, and some ended up in jail. What the king did in turn was increase the tax rate, an action that was supported by the British authorities. By mid-October 1940, Fumilayo Ransom Kuti led nearly 1,000 women at a protest at the Afin of the Alake. Afin means palace. The British authorities deployed tear gas and beat the protesters. The women continued to press the issues, and in 1947, AWU, in a document, listed all their grievances and the accusations against the king and the single native authority. Fumilayo went to London, and she met with the Secretary of State for Colonies. She granted interviews itemizing all of the British government's exploitation of its colonial subjects. This might have invigorated her because on her return, things seemed to snowball from there. By the end of the year, November 29, 1947, once again, the women held another demonstration. When I was looking up on this, I saw different numbers. I saw 30,000, I saw 50,000, but maybe we go to with the smaller number, that 30,000 women protested and they sang songs. Some of the songs are not children friendly, but the message was that the king and men had terrorized them But now the roles will be reversed. You can extrapolate from that. The king seemed to relent and seemed receptive to the negotiations. They promised that the taxation will be suspended and the final decisions communicated in a few days. Some women were arrested and then nothing happened. Moving forward to December 8, 1948, they organized another protest. They camped outside the palace demanding the release of their members and refused to leave until the 10th of December when the incarcerated members were released. AWU continued to send their petitions to the British administrators. Eventually, they prevailed. The dates, I'm not entirely sure of. I saw January and I saw February 1949. But the chiefs under the king passed a resolution changing the sole native authority to Egba Central Council with four positions for women. The resolution accused the king of corruption and abuse of power, and the king was forced to abdicate the throne. But it looks like he was exiled for only 2 years, because from the records, he was named the Alake until 1960. So maybe he was only temporarily made to leave his seat. It is recorded that the Abeokuta Women's Union continued to fight for women's rights, and they were instrumental in the independence movements to form the nation Nigeria. These are the women to teach school kids about, not the white savior sanitized stories people in colonized nations continue to promote. This group of women were exceptional and are our true feminist heroes who had to fight to protect their place in society. In the show notes, I've added some links if you want to know more about the Abeokuta Women's Revolt. There is a biography of Fumilayo Rasam-Kuti written by Judith A. Byfield. The biography features collections of Fumilayo's writings, her letters, speeches, photographs, diaries. They were all kept by her children, who realized the significance of her work. And after her death in 1978, were donated to the Kenneth DK Library at the University of Ibadan. There is also something about her on the UNESCO doc website where you can see the work of all of the women. So please take a look at all of that information. And I also wanted to mention before I leave that I had a completely different topic in mind for today, something lighthearted and a tourist destination. But because of what's happening in Nigeria, I thought that this was a more relevant post to make. The young people in Nigeria are currently protesting against police brutality, demanding the end of the Special Anti-Robbery Response Squad, which has been known to kidnap, extort, harass, maim, and kill young Nigerians. And I feel immensely proud of all the people who are risking their lives, who are going out there to fight for everyone. Even in the face of death, some protesters have already been killed. I don't live in Nigeria anymore, but what you're doing is brave, and we hope that this will bring the change that we want to that nation. Thank you to everyone for listening. Bye-bye.